The second case for oral argument this morning is the State of South Dakota Appellee versus Jacob Ludeman Appellant. For the appellant, Ludeman is Donald McCarty, an attorney from Brookings, and for the appellee is Mark Crotteville from the State's Attorney's Office in Brookings County. Mr. McCarty, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court and counsel, as you indicated, my name is Don McCarty, and I'm an attorney from Brookings, and I represent Jacob Ludeman in this case. The issues before the court today center on the South Dakota Citizens Arrest Statute and the extension of that statute as it's being applied by the SDSU Police Department on the campus at SDSU. What happened factually in this case is that sometime prior to September of 2006, the SDSU Police Department implemented a program where they decided to use students as patrol officers on their campus. They hired students to come in, dressed them up as law enforcement officers with actual uniforms on that said law enforcement, gave them badges that said SDSU Police Department, and sent them out on the campus to patrol. They were effectively, in the words of the chief of police for the SDSU Police Department, the eyes and ears of that police department. And they were instructed to detain people if they observed any criminal offense.
Were they given, does the record indicate they were given any type of training that a normal police officer would have?
There is some testimony in the record about that. The students testified that they were given some on-the-job training. They did not in any way, and it's undisputed, comply with any of the state laws with regard to reserve law enforcement officers or comply with any of the laws with regard to certified law enforcement officers. They testified generally that they were given some on-the-job training about what they were supposed to do. They put them out on campus at SDSU and patrolling, and two of those student officers, by end of January 2007, there were more students patrolling the campus than there were actually law enforcement officers with the SDSU Police Department. I think there were 16 students patrolling and maybe 10 certified SDSU Police Department officers. Two of the students that were hired were a young student who was 19 years old, one named Chambliss and the other one named Hanneman. Those two students were patrolling in the end of January of 2007. They were hired in September of 2006, so they'd been working September, October, November, December, about 5 months. They were patrolling on the campus of SDSU, and what they testified to was that they observed my client. They were about 150 feet away. They say they observed my client get out and out of his car, and they believed that he had urinated at the back of his car. Once they observed that, they approached him and the other occupant of the car. It was clear to the two patrol students that my client didn't want to have any contact with them and headed directly to his dormitory and was walking quickly. And I know there are cases out there of isolated instances, and I don't dispute those. I may not agree with every fact pattern that allows the isolated instance. But those cases don't say, as a routine practice or policy, that you can send these people out who are not certified law enforcement officers, teach them not to follow the citizen's arrest statute, then use the citizen's arrest statute as the basis for the stop, at the same time that you're using your uniform as a police officer to effectuate the arrest. That is running afoul of many different statutes and many different opinions from this court. If that was the way things were going to be handled, we wouldn't need a statute that said law enforcement officers have to be certified. We wouldn't need statutes or administrative rules that talk about reserve officers. We wouldn't need a citizen's arrest statute. You just throw it all out the window. So what I urge to the court is if there was ever a situation Where the exclusionary rule should apply, it is this case. As I said, you are, it is not an isolated instance. The chief of police testified that they have more of these students working for him than he does actual law enforcement officers. There is a point where you have to stop that process, or the rules no longer apply and the rules no longer mean anything at all. The one thing I want to point out for the court in particular is that also both of the student officers, both of the student patrol officers, testified that they had no basis to arrest my client other than the public urination. There was no probable cause for any other offense. They were asked specifically those questions, and they answered. Cody Chambliss testified to it. It's in the preliminary hearing transcript. And Mark Hanneman testified to it. That's in the suppression hearing transcript. He testified that he stopped them because he thought he had probable cause to believe that Mr. Ludeman had committed a criminal offense and that that offense was public urination. And the reason I point that out is because, again, we're before the court on the definition of the petty offense, which is a municipal ordinance violation, which I believe is clear under the prior precedence of this court, is a petty offense if the prior cases are applied to this fact pattern. I'll reserve the remainder of my time for my rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. McCarty. Mr. Crowderville, you have 10 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. The first issue before this court focuses our attention on the words petty offense as used by the legislature in the citizen's arrest statute. This court on many occasions has had an opportunity to address its function in the area of statutory construction. I think perhaps one of the best summaries of your discussions and conclusions is contained in our brief on page 6, where we quote, "Statutory construction is employed to discover the true intent of the legislature in enacting the laws. All of the rules of statutory construction are focused on discovering the true intent of the legislature in enacting the law." Today, appellant asks you to ignore the rules of construction. He asks you to make no attempt to identify the legislative intent in enacting this law and putting the words "other than a petty offense" in the citizen arrest statute. He cites to you four of your cases where you've used the word, the adjective petty, to describe the offense, a noun, the noun offense, and you use that to describe a level of offense for which no jury trial is required. That is what's in those four cases. They have nothing to do with the citizen's arrest statute. And he's suggesting to you, the appellant is, that you use those four decisions to declare to the legislature how they must use the words petty offense. That is not attempting to discover the true intent of the legislature. That is ignoring the rules of construction.
So are you saying there is more than one definition of petty offense?
I am saying the legislature is free to use the words petty offense in any manner they choose.
Of course.
And the fact that this court used those words in our language can have multiple meanings. The words petty and offense, if you look them up in a dictionary, do have multiple meanings. The legislature is free to use those words in any manner they desire, and it is the function of this court to identify their intent in using those words.
So you're saying that for one purpose, like a jury trial, there's one definition of a petty offense, but for a citizen's arrest, there's another definition of petty
offense?
Certainly.
Oh. It is based upon the intent of the legislature in using those words.
Your argument then leads me to this next question then. Where do we look to find what they're, how they define it? They just use it, and they don't define it anyplace.
I think you use the rules of statutory construction, which is exactly what the circuit court did. He applied the rules of statutory construction to identify the intent of the legislature. He did that in a written opinion that appears in the settled record in this matter. It's captioned Decision on Appeal. It is also attached to appellant's brief. I would encourage you to review that opinion because he applied the rules of construction. He reviewed the statute. He reviewed related statutes on the same subject. There's a whole section, a whole chapter dealing with procedures for petty offenses. There are numerous code sites which declare things to be petty offenses. He reviewed the statutes, he applied the rules of construction, and he concluded, and I think rightfully so, that the legislature has developed a statutory scheme whereby a petty offense is a category of offense, a category of public offense. He makes reference to the definition of public offense, recalling that the statute here says any person may arrest any other person for any public offense other than a petty offense committed in their presence. There's a definition for public offense. It's contained in Chapter 22. It's cited in our brief, and it's cited in Judge Foley's decision. And that definition says petty offenses, a public offense includes petty offenses, crimes, and municipal ordinance violations, clearly indicating an intent, as Judge Foley held, to indicate that a petty offense for purposes of statutory construction is something different than a municipal ordinance violation.
Well, a municipal ordinance can also be a Class 2 misdemeanor, correct?
Correct.
So it could be a petty offense, or it could be a municipal ordinance, could be a petty offense, or it could be a Class 2 misdemeanor, right?
A municipal ordinance violation is oftentimes a petty offense for purposes of your four decisions concerning jury trials. No question about that. But we're talking about a category that the legislature has established. The circuit court said that the legislature has created a statutory scheme whereby a petty offense is a category or class of public offense. We're talking about, you know, it's like apples and oranges, the old phrase, apples and oranges. They're two different things. The use of your use of the words petty offense in those decisions is something entirely different. You were using the adjective petty to describe the offense, an offense, a level of offense for which no jury trial is required. Justice Meyer Henry suggested that where's the bright line? The bright line is this. The legislature has created this statutory scheme in which a petty offense is a category of offense as determined by Judge Foley. It is civil in nature, and the statutes do not authorize any arrests for petty offense. That is in the procedure chapter concerning petty offenses, 23.1a, I think it's section 7. And that is, and Judge Foley concluded that the use of the words other than a petty offense can only relate to that statutory classification created by the legislature.
Okay. Under your classification, then, is it your position that under that statute, that there can be a citizen's arrest for any municipal ordinance violation in spite of the fact that a municipal ordinance violation is a civil proceeding?
Correct.
Are you saying that you can have a citizen's arrest on a civil proceeding regardless of the ordinance violation? How far do you take that? Junkyards? And nuisances? Those are all municipal ordinance violations.
If it is the legislature has said that a citizen may arrest, first of all, a municipal ordinance violation is, I didn't say it was a civil matter. I said petty offenses are civil matters.
Well, municipal ordinance violations are also, are they not? Under
municipal ordinance
Title IX?
Municipal ordinance violations are prosecuted in the name of the municipality. Yes, and they provide for an authorized fine of $200 and a jail sentence of 30 days. So I would question whether they're truly civil in nature. At any rate, they are included in the definition of public offense that the legislature has provided, and a citizen may arrest anyone for a public offense. Judge Foley identified, and again, I would recommend that well-written decision to you. He identified that statutory scheme whereby petty offenses are public offenses, and they're not, or petty offenses, municipal ordinance violations are public offenses, and they're not petty offenses. His decision on that issue, as well as the magistrate court's decision on that issue, should be affirmed. The second issue before the court relates again to the citizen's arrest statute. In essence, appellant is arguing that SDSU police officers have no authority to arrest under the citizen's arrest statute. A fair reading of the citizen's arrest statute says any person may arrest any other person for a public offense. It doesn't make any exceptions. This court, in the McDonald and the Davison cases cited in the briefs, held that police officers in uniform, on duty, may arrest under the citizen's arrest statute. Clearly consistent with the language of the legislature saying any person can do this. Now, in support of his argument, and he argues, and I think it's true, he acknowledges there are no South Dakota, first of all, the statute and the case authority in South Dakota does not support his position. But he argues that there are other decisions in this country that support it, and he cites two decisions, New York versus Williams and Florida versus Shipman. I would encourage you to look at both of those cases. The New York versus Williams decision is based strictly on the New York statute involved. And that statute, by its terms, says that law enforcement officers may not make citizens' arrests. Our statute says no such thing. Our statute says any person may make a citizen's arrest. The other case he cites is Florida versus Shipman. And as indicated in our brief, we don't believe it supports his position. He maintains in his brief that Florida versus Shipman is authority for the premise that law enforcement officers may not, under color of their authority, proceed with a citizen's arrest. A careful reading of the Shipman decision indicates no such thing. The Shipman decision said law enforcement officers have every right to make a citizen's arrest as anyone else, but they may not, under color of their authority, or color of their office, outside their jurisdiction, gather evidence. They may not use their color of office to gather evidence. That's what the Shipman decision is all about. Now, and that's what we've argued in our brief. In preparation for oral argument this morning, I found two additional Florida cases. I provided those to counsel yesterday. Those Florida cases reinforce our argument that Shipman doesn't apply in the way appellant claims it does. I have, at the suggestion of the clerk's office, I have brought with me 10 copies of each of those cases, and I would either offer those at this time and just mention them, or I could file a motion requesting permission to provide supplemental authority.
You can talk about them at this time and then just leave them with the clerk after the oral argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Those two cases are City of Florida versus Phoenix, 428 South Senate 262, and Phoenix versus Florida, 455 South Senate 1024. The first case, State versus Phoenix, was decided by the same district court who decided Shipman, the exact same district court. It made it clear that law enforcement officers are restricted from gathering evidence using the color of authority. Perhaps the facts of that case are important. In that case, deputies from one Florida county suspected smuggling was going on, observed something at night. They followed the individuals to another county, continued to make observations from a distance, and ultimately, with lights flashing, guns drawn, badges shown, in the Senkett County where they didn't have any jurisdiction, they stopped the other vehicle for smuggling. The Phoenix court held that because they made all of their observations without exercising their authority, that they could effectuate the stop even exercising their authority. And they said that Shipman actually said that. That's what Phoenix says. Applying that to the facts of this case, the student officers here were on patrol walking on a public campus, walking down a street. They made observations of the appellant driving on that public street. They made observations of the appellant parking his car in a public parking lot. They made observations of the appellant getting out of that car and proceeding to urinate, which counsel has acknowledged that did happen. They walked over there and observed, one of them observed that there was urine on the parking lot, that public parking lot, and vomit from the companion of the appellant on the parking lot as well, and they observed the companion get out of the vehicle and vomit. What's important to understand is all of those observations were made in a place where any citizen could have done it. They did not exercise any authority, any sort of police authority of any kind in making those observations. All of the probable cause for which they obtained to demonstrate to them that they had witnessed in their presence a violation of a public offense. I mean, this
is the first thing out of their mouth, stop SDSU police.
Yes, they did. But under Shipman, that's authorized. They can do that. And I would suggest that if one reads the McDonald and Davidson cases, in neither of those cases did the officers say, I'm arresting you under the citizen's arrest statute. There's no language necessary to effectuate a stop. A stop, it's a Fourth Amendment issue. And the rules that apply to, there's only one Fourth Amendment. And it applies to government action. And those, it applies to law enforcement officers and student officers and government employees of all kinds. But it's one Fourth Amendment. And the question is did the stop of those, did the stop by the student officers viewed objectively violate the Fourth Amendment rights of appellant? And I think under Shipman, clearly our South Dakota Code provides that any person may arrest another person for I believe, a municipal ordinance violation committed in their presence. And if that is the case, They had the authority under the South Dakota Code to effectuate that arrest. And they did no more in effectuating that arrest than is provided by the arrest chapter. That chapter suggests that an individual who does a citizen's arrest immediately turn that person over to a magistrate or a law enforcement officer. What happened here? The student officers stopped him. They called a certified officer. He was present on the scene within 2 minutes. They turned him over to the certified officer. They did no more procedurally than is required under the citizen's arrest statute. Now, counsel has made a great deal of the policy of the SDSU Police Department. And he said it's running afoul of many different statutes and opinions of this court. I don't find any statutes or opinions of this court. They're not cited in the brief, and he has not been specific about that. The arrest here was consistent with the citizen's arrest statute. The stop here was if one reads the policy of the SDSU Police Department as contained, testified to by the chief of police, in effect, he said, the student officers have the authority to detain people when they witness them committing a crime. That is exactly out of the citizen's arrest statute. No more. Where he went afoul, he said, that authority came from me. And he was admonished by the magistrate court, correctly so, that he didn't have authority to do it. But when you focus on the facts of this case, those student officers, under the correct reading of the citizen's arrest statute, had authority to stop them and turn them over to the law enforcement officer.
Thank you, Mr. Cratterville. Mr. McCarty, you have 10 minutes, sir.
I did cite State versus Shipman in my brief. And in that case, again, I'll point out to the court that was an individual occurrence. It was not, through in that case, established that this was something that was routinely being done by a police force. And that is the main distinction between what they're trying to do here and what was done in State versus Shipman. In State versus Shipman, it says, "We share the trial court's concern for the apparent increase in activity by police outside their jurisdiction. It would appear there are numerous ways to do it right. It seems rather ludicrous for the police authorities to rely on the citizen's arrest authority." And that case, I agree that it's different from this one to the extent that that was a unique situation, and that's why the court differentiated there. What I would tell you is that State versus Shipman, based on the language I just read to you, would have been decided completely different if the officers that got up on the stand got up and said, "Hey, we're doing this all the time. We think we can use this all the time. We don't need to comply with the rest of the requirements as far as jurisdiction or when whether we're certified law enforcement officers or not." Also, I would point out in the case cited by Mr. Cratterville, I would direct your attention to pages 6 and 7 of that opinion, because again, in Phoenix, Florida versus Phoenix, page 6 of that opinion, the court says they have language in there that they don't think they should strike down this arrest merely because they happened to be in uniform or happened to be in a police car, and at the time they inadvertently witnessed an offense. Our decision is not intended to condone, they use the word, persistent intervention by one law enforcement agency into a jurisdiction of another. Should a pattern emerge, it would need to be addressed. Now, that situation is a little bit different because those cases deal with certified law enforcement officers acting outside of their jurisdiction. Those cases say, well, we're going to let this one go, because it was unique facts. It started in your county. It drew you across the line. You didn't have jurisdiction, and you effectuated the arrest. We're okay with that. We can understand those unique facts. But they say, they again admonish the police agency there to say, listen, guys, if this becomes persistent or if a pattern emerges, we're going to deal with it. What I'm telling this court is that this is persistent at SDSU. The pattern exists. We have more student patrol officers than we have certified law enforcement officers. If that is not persistent, if that is not a pattern, I don't know what is. I would also direct the court's attention, and I do not have multiple copies of it. I only found it this morning after I was provided with a copy of the cases referred to by Mr. Crotteville, State versus Lahr, L-A-H-R, 589 Northeast 2nd, 589 Northeast 2nd, 539. And that case refers to the Florida versus Phoenix cases. That case again says if these things start to become a pattern or a policy, that's a different story.
You can send us 10 copies of Lahr at your convenience.
What's that?
You can send the court 10 copies of State v. Lahr at your convenience.
And I will do that,
thank you,
Judge. With regard to the petty offense issue, what I will tell the court there is there are all kinds of rules of statutory construction. I'll be the first to admit that. I don't disagree that the rules of statutory construction that were cited to you by the state's attorney are accurate statements of statutory construction. What I also would tell this court, and I don't think it will come as any surprise, is that before I ever get to those rules of statutory construction in a case like this, the first red flag that goes off in my mind is that the state is advocating that you apply two different definitions to the same phrase. To anybody that wants to get involved in statutory construction, that is a red flag. If somebody wants to advocate that there should be two different definitions for the same phrase, they better be citing some pretty hard legislative intent that although it says this over here, uses this phrase over here, we mean it differently over here. And there is no statutory, there is no legislative intent out there that shows that. There simply is not. With regard to his argument with regard to petty being used as an adjective or in one case and not in another, I'll tell you my extent of my knowledge with regard to rules of grammar are surpassed by my fourth grade son every evening. So I'm not going to claim to be the grammar teacher, but I think in both instances, petty simply describes is simply being used to describe the word offense. It's using it to describe it as a very minimal offense, something that doesn't carry with it a great amount of significance. That's exactly how this court has used it. This court has looked at the word petty offense to mean, let's look first at what the punishment is to determine whether this is a petty offense. This court has acknowledged that there is no statutory definition for petty offense and as a result created a test. All I'm asking is that definition that this court has previously established apply to my client, and that it be applied, that phrase be applied consistently in his case. Public urination is a petty offense, therefore you don't get a jury trial. Public urination is a petty offense, therefore you can't use the citizen's arrest statute to effectuate the arrest. That is not a huge leap with regard to interpretation of statutes. The last point I would want to make to the court is that I think, it's my position at least, that while I don't necessarily agree with some of the cases out there that allow an officer to effectuate, a certified law enforcement officer to effectuate an arrest outside their jurisdiction, I understand the rationale. And I think we can all live with those cases because their unique situations arise and therefore we have to do it. I think this case is more egregious because we're not even starting out with a certified law enforcement officer. They want to go across the across the whole continuum. They want to start with somebody that's not certified. They want to dress them up in a police uniform as if and give the impression that they are. They want to use those people to effectuate an arrest. And then they want to use the citizen's arrest statute to legitimize it. If that, again, doesn't raise concern, then from my perspective, we don't need all the statutes put in place already that say you have to be certified, that arrest can happen under these only these circumstances, that the Fourth Amendment applies. We don't need those things. If that's the way that they're going to be applied, you might as well throw them out the window. That's the conclusion of my argument. I would ask the court to reverse the decisions of the magistrate court and the circuit court, both on its decision that this offense was not a petty offense for purposes of the citizen's arrest statute, and then also reverse, if you get to this issue, on the grounds that the evidence should be suppressed based on the exclusionary rule given the policy used by the SDSU Police Department. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCarty. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.